next session. I should also thank the organizers for asking me to lead the discussion, even though I still don't know what exactly that's supposed to mean. But let me start by relating the dualities you heard earlier this week. So there is the duality that Mike talked about yesterday. So it's a pretty simple one. So on the left-hand side of the duality, I have a free Dirac fermion. So let me write it this way. I'll explain what I mean here. So it's a free Dirac fermion that couples to an external probe U1 gauge field, capital A. So this background term, minus 1 over 8 pi ADA, is just simply saying that if I try to realize this Dirac fermion in pure 2 plus 1 dimension, I need a background Hall conductivity plus or minus 1 half. So if you prefer to think on the lattice, roughly what you do is to realize two Dirac fermions first and then open up a gap for the other one. Okay. So that's on the left-hand side. So on the right-hand side, the claim is that it's dual to something that looks like a boson theory. So let me explain. So this phi is a Wilson-Fisher boson. So this term here is really a shorthand notation for the Lagrangian of the Wilson-Fisher boson tuned to criticality. And the little a is a dynamical U1 gauge field that has a Chern-Simon term at level 1. I'm also suppressing the Maxwell term here. And it couples to the external capital A gauge field through this mutual BF coupling. So you've seen this yesterday. So let me remind you quickly how the duality actually works here. So so let's first look at the symmetries. So I have the global U1 symmetry. So on the left-hand side is just the current of my Dirac fermion, the standard one. So on my right-hand side, since the external gauge field couples to the flux of my little a gauge field. So here, my current is really the flux. So the conservation of the electric charge on the left-hand side becomes the conservation of my flux of the dynamical gauge field. If you like, IJK, JK. And so, so that's symmetry. So the U1 symmetries match. So what about operators? So the operators on the left-hand side, I have the basic operator is just the free fermion operator. And on my right-hand side, I want an operator, first of all, that carries the global charge 1 under the global U1A. But since on the right-hand side, my flux, the global charge is carried by the flux of this dynamical U1A, dynamical little a gauge field. So I want some operator that carries 2 pi flux of this little a gauge field. So formally, that's like a monopole operator or an instanton operator in this gauge theory that creates a 2 pi flux. But because of the Chern-Simons term here, this alone is not gauging variant. So I should really attach a boson, phi boson here. And that makes it a fermion. So that's operator. And you can also convince yourself that the phase diagrams match. What I mean by this. So suppose I turn on a MOS for the Dirac fermion. So for the free fermion, I know what I'm doing. So if I now the Dirac fermions are gapped at low energy, I can integrate it out. The only thing I'm left with is a response theory. So depending on the sign of the MOS, so if you integrate out a gapped Dirac fermion, what you get is a Hall conductance 1 half times the sine of the mass. Okay. So I get this. But then together with the background term already there, I get either 0 or minus 1, depending on the sine of my mass. So So this is the original background term, which means if I tune my fermion mass M, so on the positive side, I got a trivial insulator. And if M is negative, I got an integer quantum Hall effect.
With
oh, sorry. Yeah. Yes. Okay. So what about on this side? On this side, turns out this corresponds to a mass term for the bosons. And for the positive sign of mass, it turns out that corresponds to a phase where the boson just condense. So it's a Higgs phase. And once my boson condense, because it couples to the little a gauge field, so everything is gapped, so you know, it's a Higgs phase. So it's a trivial insulator, indeed. And on this side, that corresponds to a phase where my bosons are gapped. And the boson forms an insulator, so at low energy, we can just integrate it out. It doesn't give me anything. So at low energy, what I get is basically just this piece. So it's just a U1 transaminance theory at level 1. Couples to an external gauge field this way. And this is exactly how people represent integer quantum Hall state using the effective transaminance theory. Okay. So what I get is what's called U1 level 1. Okay. So that's how the phase diagrams match. So essentially, you can view the left-hand side as a free fermion representation of the transition from a trivial insulator to an integer quantum Hall effect. And the right-hand side is more like a composite boson picture. So this term morally gives you what people call flux attachment.
Can I ask you something?
Yes.
So if you would take the one line above part of the duality very seriously, shouldn't the mass of the electrons correspond to sort of the mass of the instanton?
I don't know. It's the it actually is the mass of the boson. The electron operator corresponds to the instanton operator.
So it's saying that you take the two multiple instanton operator into OPE, then you generate the
criteria. You take this and the dagger of this, is the leading, this will be the leading order term. Yeah, okay. And basically for symmetry reasons. Okay, so this duality Mike talked about yesterday. And so let me show you how you go from here to the fermion-fermion duality Max talked about the day before yesterday. Okay. So the way to generate dualities from this single one is to do the following. So there are two formal operations I can do on this duality. Let's say. Suppose I first have a theory 1 that couples to an external gauge field, capital A, dual to theory 2, the external capital A. So if you like, theory 1 is the free Dirac. On this side, theory 2 is the boson with U1 level 1 on the right-hand side. So they are dual. So if you accept that, so you can do two operations. So the first operation sometimes is called S operation. It's really gauging the capital A. So what I do here is I upgrade my probe gauge field to a dynamical gauge field, little a. So for this talk, whenever I write a little a, it means dynamical gauge field. Whenever I write a capital A, it means a probe gauge field. And I couple the little a to another probe gauge field this way. So essentially, what I'm doing here is essentially gauging this U1 symmetry while insisting that the flux of this little a is conserved. So I do it on both sides. So let me emphasize that this theory and this theory in general are different. Right? I'm doing some highly non-local manipulation. But since I'm doing it on both sides, the duality still holds. So if this is due to this, then this theory should also be due to this one. And so that's one operation. So another operation, which looks more trivial, sometimes called T operation, essentially is adding another layer of integer quantum Hall state.
Was that just an assertion that you made, or well, you just said if you gauge it, it should still be dual? Is that obvious?
It's obvious if you don't think too hard. So if you think really hard, you can view this as a way to motivate another guess.
Okay.
Yeah. Because well, we don't have proof for this anymore.
Are we thinking really hard right now, or are we just?
Let's not do that, right?
I think that even if you assume line one,
yeah,
it might be a little bit of prayer in one.
That's why I'm saying you need to.
Sorry,
yeah.
What do you need to pray about? Sorry. What's your?
Yeah, because this is really an IR duality, even if you assume it. So when you couple it to a dynamical gauge field, if you, let's say, you have to do it in the UV. You cannot just suddenly decide to do it in the IR. And then whether the RG flow can still work the way you want, can work out the way you want them to do.
But it's the same perturbation on both sides, right?
It is the same perturbation on both sides, but you have to remember the two theories are not identical in the UV.
Sure.
Yeah, so then you're adding two same perturbation on both sides, you know, whether they still flow in IR to the same fixed point, you sort of have to.
But we know they're not identical in the UV, or?
I mean, for this theory, it's almost obvious. If you, in the UV, it's this weakly coupled theory. There's no hope that it can be a free fermion.
They're not both conformal.
No, if you in the UV, if you start with this is what I.
Oh, you want to put that? Okay.
Well, in the UV, for example, you can you can couple E to zero.
Yeah, if you have a strong coupling definition in the UV, then it's okay. Uh-huh. Yeah, you can.
Put E equals zero, and then a coding term equals zero, it's going to flow to IR. If you put that, actually, you're going to compare the entire entropy of both sides, that should get out of the match. One free boson, one free fermion.
Yeah, but that's one choice of UV regularization.
Yeah, if you want to regularize in the continuum, then you sort of have to do that. But if you allow yourself to do a lattice regularization, then that's not a serious issue. Yeah, okay. So the other operation, which is less subtle, is really just adding a layer of integer quantum Hall state on top. Right, so I'm not gauging anything or doing anything funny. Just adding a Chern-Simon term on both sides.
Why do you call them S and T? Are they related to duality in the entire dimension?
Yes, they're related to SL2Z electromagnetic duality, previous one. And you can also show that they basically form an SL2Z group in this projective one. But yeah, so right. So this T looks trivial, but the funny thing is it doesn't commute with S. So if you put it together with S, with some funny mixture, you get interesting dualities. One example, so essentially you generate infinitely many dualities out of doing this. So one way that's particularly interesting is that if you start with this duality and you do an operation that's formally like if you do ST minus 2S, so it's not something that looks particularly simple. But if you do that anyway on both sides, you actually find an interesting duality. So on the left-hand side.
I'm sorry, what do you mean with T minus 2?
So you add a Chern-Simon term level minus 2.
Okay.
Yeah. So what you get on the left-hand side is something that looks like this. So psi CF is just a Dirac fermion. I'm just calling it CF here. So So little a is a dynamical gauge field, little b is another dynamical gauge field. Okay, so it looks something like this on the right hand side. On the left hand side, on the right hand side, it actually is, it turns out to be something extremely simple. Yeah, done. So,
so your each step of S is introduce A and B, little a and little
b. Yeah, each step of S, I'm introducing another dynamical gauge field. That's why after 2S, I have two dynamical gauge field here.
And your covariant derivative have all of them?
Yeah. So, I mean, dA means just A. Here it's just the external. So on the right hand side it's just a free derivative from you. On the left hand side it's this mess. Well, I jumped a little bit. So if you do it on this side, you get exactly that. That's the logic. But if you do it on the right hand side, naively you get a bosonic theory, a boson with some horrible gauge field, some Chern-Simon term. But you realize that you can simplify that actually back to the original form. So this one, if you do S, T minus T, T minus 2, S, it turns out you go back to the same form. But we know this is already due to the free fermion, free Dirac fermion. So there is the additional step here. But let me not go into the detail there. Okay, you may complain that this doesn't look exactly like what Max told you the other day. The equation is considerably longer. But you can do one thing. That is, notice this little b gauge field doesn't couple directly to the matter field. It does couple to some other gauge fields here. So, and it's a Chern-Simon theory, so formally it's a gapped field. So you can try to integrate out this little b. And if you do that, a magic happens. Well, integrating out little b is really just saying you get the equation of motion for little b and substitute it back in. And then you notice that all the nasty Chern-Simons term cancel out. And what you get is basically just this one. That's it. So this is exactly what Max showed you on Wednesday. So it's a single Dirac fermion coupled to a dynamical little a that couples to the external a.
If you integrate out b, you have to solve the equation of motion, something like 2b equals...
Yeah. The equation of motion would be something like... Okay. So the equation of motion would be something like 1 over, well, will be 4 over 4 pi dB. There's a minus sign here. And from this, you have 1 over 2 pi dA. And from this, you have 1 over 2 pi dA equal to 0. So up to a gauge transform, we have B is basically what... couldn't do algebra here. 1 half A plus A, something like that. I think I did it right. And then you substitute back in. Then you realize all these funny things cancel and...
So can you show us the time of
Rose
transformation over the long equation?
You'll be punished by that. It's not extremely illuminating, but okay, I can show it.
You want to take the question, John?
What?
What's the question?
Oh, the question is, the question is, if I take the short form of Lagrangian, then time reversal sort of works out very simply. On the right-hand side, it's time reversal invariance, basically the surface of a TI. Here, it's also very simple. It's like the surface of a dual TI. So the Dirac fermion is still formally time reversal invariant, and this one I can make a time reversal invariant. It's not a problem. But if I'm working with this guy, then it looks like I have something horrible. I have a self-Chern-Simon term BDB here, a self-Chern-Simon term ADA, self-Chern-Simon term capital A, D capital A, it looks like under time reversal, they should all be odd. So, yes?
Did you just, you added a 1 over 8 pi ADA to both sides?
Yes, yes, yes. I secretly did that just to make the time reversal structure.
Because that's anomalous and that's not anomalous.
Exactly. So I'm actually adding this on both sides. Yes. Yeah. So you can ask what's going on. The reason why we sort of care about what's going on here, instead of not just working with this, let me go one step back, is because this integrating out little b, very strictly speaking, is an illegal step. You can sort of see how it's illegal already from here. You have some funny 1/2 here. So formally, when you have a non-trivial TQFT, something like transaminase U1 level 2, we know you don't want to just integrate it out. You get the right response, but you miss some important topological information. If I give you the Laughlin 1/2 state, it's described by U1 level 2. You don't want to just integrate that out. You miss the anions, you miss degeneracy on the torus, all that.
Yeah, so, but Felix, is there an anion or not?
No, but when these are coupled non-trivially to other things, it's not that simple. If it's just U1 level 2 alone, then you have anions, all that.
Exactly. Yeah. Eventually, physically, we don't want that.
You don't have to, eventually, you don't have that because they also couple to other gauge field, the other gauge field couples to. Yeah, it's not that simple. But as a TQFD, it's actually a non trivial TQFD. So you have to be a bit careful when you integrate that out. In fact, the funny thing you see after integrating out is that, so actually, this Lagrangian, if you take it literally, it makes no sense. That's a strong word. It has some weirdness in it. So for a very pure-hearted field theorist, writing something like this down is almost like blasphemy, because it's well known that a single Dirac fermion, if it's time reversal invariant, cannot be gauge invariant. So it looks like I'm having some gauge anomaly, and also this 1 over 4 pi little a d capital A also looks funny, because if everything is legal, the minimum mutual BF coupling I'm allowed to write down is something like this. So this is half of what's allowed. So in some sense, you have to, this is an alternative definition of the fermion-fermion duality that takes care of all those issues. But then you have the problem of what happens with time reversal here, which is what Tinka was asking.
Sorry, these issues are related to gauge invariance?
Yes.
And when you integrate out B, somehow you're violating gauge invariance?
Yeah, essentially, if you're imposing this.
Just integrating out?
Yeah, the thing is, it's gapped, but we know that if it's a non-trivial TQFD, even though it's gapped, you may not be able to integrate it out without losing information.
Even with the quadratic theory.
Even with the quadratic
maybe,
theory.
Maybe I can elaborate on that. If you're, it's really only strictly, really, at the level of partition function, the problem comes when you put the system on a compact manifold.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And that's where you have to carefully do an integral of both the perturbative and non-perturbative parts of B.
Yeah.
And the non-perturbative parts. Is what screws up.
Yeah, for example, if it's on a torus, you have you could have an interesting gauge field configuration on the cycles and all that. So imposing this will miss all that.
Can you say that it's not actually gapped because there are thinner ground states?
Sort of. You have like
not gapped. It's gapless, but there's
in a sense, you have like two degenerate ground states. Somehow you're ignoring that.
You see that if you naively write B equals half of that, you're violating the quantization condition on these gauge fields. Right?
Yeah, basically.
But precisely why A has some unusual quantization.
Yeah. So, yeah. So this is one of the two alternative definitions of the Dirac QED theory. The other one, Max may want to talk about. I don't know. But let me proceed with this one a little bit. Just answer Chitanka's question. So it turns out to make sense of time reversal, you have to do one additional thing on the left-hand side. So let me do it. So let me take this out. Yeah, it turns out time reversal on this legal, this more legal definition of the theory is quite cumbersome and not super illuminating. So let me show you how to do it. So essentially, you add to this Lagrangian a trivial part. So what you can add, so what I mean by trivial part, I mean something like this. So you add yet another dynamical gauge field. Let me call it C, and couple this way. So C, since it's at U1 level 1, so it's really a trivial PQFD, there's no problem with integrating it out.
It's a quantum Hall state.
Yeah, it's a quantum Hall state, but I'm also adding this background term to compensate for that. So if you integrate out C, you drop all these three terms. Sorry, yeah. Yes. Right. So this is really a trivial sector, and I'm basically adding nothing. But this allows me to make time reversal manifest. So first of all, combining this one with this one, it's basically like shifting this to plus 1 over 8 pi. Now I have a horrible action. It turns out time reversal can be implemented quite simply. So what I do is basically, so on this side, time reversal is very simple. It's just psi e equals to I sigma y psi e. The usual way of implementing time reversal symmetry for a free Dirac fermion. So on my left-hand side, first of all, similar to what Max has told you the other day, the composite fermion, under time reversal, it looks like a particle hole symmetry. So there's a dagger here on the left-hand side. And the little a gauge field, let me write the space component. So the time component will transform oppositely. Okay. Do this. So those are the same as what Max told you the other day. The funny thing, well, okay. Also the capital A space component gets inverted. What's non-trivial is this B and C. Okay, so what happened is, so these are all space components. I have no intuition why you have to do this, but if you suppose you do this and substitute back into the action, it's invariant. It works.
How do you know this is the way time reversal should act on that action?
Oh, if you do this, it's invariant.
it is a operation.
It is a operation. So so what?
Okay, so how about t squared minus 1? Can you show?
No. So t squared equal to minus 1 on the physical operator that you can show.
Yeah.
Because for this guy, the operator that it corresponds to is some monopole operator here, and that t squared property came from the zero mode properties of that monopole operator. So that much you can show. But t squared on this, sort of auxiliary fields, they behave very weird.
So on the free Dirac
fermion
side, I have t squared minus 1.
Yes.
On
that side, t squared is what?
No, t squared minus 1, you have to specify what the minus 1
is. Yeah. You have to specify which operator. Yeah, it's the minus 1 to the physical fermion number parity.
Right.
So you can ask the question, this operator corresponds to some operator here. And I just need to make sure that operator has this equal to minus 1. And that works out. Yeah, for that, you don't even need all this. You can work with the simplified version.
So t squared acts on these B and C in a non-trivial way.
That part is super weird. T squared acting on B and C gives you minus B and minus C.
Some kind of
so
that's minus 1.
No,
no, no, no. It's no, no. This is not a. If you like, the curl of this is like some kind, some density of something.
Yeah.
So you're having a density of something that t squared equal to minus one, which means physically it has to be zero. So. Well, it's okay if you put everything on shell, meaning if you impose equation of motion, then they're okay. So this cause, so for most purposes, this doesn't really matter unless you want to put the whole thing on a non-orientable manifold. If you have something like this, you don't know how to make sense of it.
So for example, if you deform a series by going to a gapped phase, these transformations on B and C don't matter.
Oh, no. So okay. You can, for example, pair condense the fermions and get a topological order. There, it doesn't matter because it's a TQFD. This part doesn't really matter. You can put it on shell.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
But there's probably, like, if you try to add some quadratic terms involving.
Yes. If you add Maxwell term, like, all that, you have to be careful. So
Presumably, this T squared means that neither DB nor DC are physical degrees of freedom, that they must always be zero on shell.
Yeah. So you don't, for example, you don't want to add Maxwell term for B and C.
This is not something you could have figured out by, say, thinking about what are you doing when you do S.
No. The problem here is
an afterthought.
It's the combination of this that preserves time reversal. The individual one of them doesn't necessarily. I mean, this T is adding a transcendent term.
Right,
that explicitly
right.
Ruins time reversal.
And is ST minus 2S and ST plus 2S different? I imagine when you specify it, it's because
you can. I think you can do it either way. But you may need to be a little bit careful about those. Definitions of either minus level half or plus level half, but other than that, it's fine.
John?
Yes?
What is the different T for time reversal as compared to your...
There's something very non-standard about this.
It is.
So if you cure the parity and only problem you had before, but there's some price you're paying.
Yeah, there's some price you pay. You still don't know, for example, you still don't know how to put it on a non-orientable manifold, which supposedly you should be able to.
So why can't I just add Maxwell term? Usually you're allowed in theory just to...
Yeah, you're allowed for this guy. Somehow for this guy's...
B and C, I mean.
Yeah.
So there's some extra rules that we usually are not.
Yeah. Well, if you like, it's like saying in the UV you can add Maxwell term, then it means the time reversal symmetry is not really there in the UV. You have to flow all the way to the deep IR where the Maxwell term, essentially you drop it. And then you can...
So you can only get an emergence metric.
If you define it as a continuum field theory. If you have a lattice strong coupling definition, then it probably doesn't matter.
It's strictly set the Maxwell terms to zero at the lattice scale.
Something like that. Well, on the lattice, it may not even just be Maxwell. You have like cosine or that. So it could be more complicated.
Cosine is not invariant
on
that either, right?
No, it's not. So
it's not just about invariance. It's more about the fact that usually we have a local operator, local bosonic operator, and the T squared that must go itself. And that's certainly true on the right hand side of the theory. Any local bosonic operator will go to itself or minus itself.
To itself.
But here, so this means that neither DB nor DC are local bosonic operators. So you cannot add any combination of them, strictly speaking.
So this came from doing these operations on the duality stage on the left.
Yes.
And where did that come from? Maybe I came in too late. Did you just quote Mike Mulligan?
I did. But there are many ways to motivate that conjecture. Well, first of all, it's a conjecture.
Okay. Okay.
So there are many ways to motivate that. And deforming SUSY, like what Mike did, was one way. The other way is you can just essentially check the symmetries, the operators, and the phase diagram. The symmetries match, so there is a common U1 charge conservation on both sides. The operators seem match, and more importantly, the phase diagram match. So essentially, on the left-hand side, you can view it. So it's a 3D rock fermion. You can view it as a free fermion picture of the transition from a trivial insulator to an integer quantum Hall state. So on the right-hand side, it's essentially the same transition, but in the composite boson picture. So this this term is doing the flux attachment. So for the composite boson, if it's condensed, you're doing a trivial insulator. If it's gapped, so you're left with U1 level 1, which describes the conventional integer quantum Hall state.
Is there a sensitivity which, say, some correlation functions match?
So that would be the conjecture. So if this conjecture is true, the correlation functions must match, like the scaling dimensions should match. But there's, as far as I know, there's no way to calculate any non-trivial correlation function on this side. For example, if the operators indeed match, then this operator should have scaling dimension 1, and this operator should have scaling dimension 2. But I don't think anybody knows how to actually show that directly from here.
So, for example, you cannot do an epsilon expansion because of
No. I mean, yeah, I don't know any way to do it. Large N will be really bad, I'm pretty sure. Epsilon expansion, I don't know.
And there's no, it's really not an equal one, of course.
Yeah, yeah. And it's important that an equal one. So, yeah.
Why is an equal one important?
Oh, if you have more Wilson-Fisher bosons, it's not even supposed to be due to that.
Oh, you mean in terms of the number of layers?
Yeah.
If you have more flavors, okay. The transition zone between different phases. It's not transition between integer for the whole attribute.
Yeah, I think that's more than 15 minutes, I promised, but
yeah. So the plan was that people have questions, kind of collect some questions, put them on board, and start a discussion. That's one way to go. If there are no questions, maybe Max can talk or something.
We should make some, so we compare the longer version of the equation and the shorter version, right? So the longer version has some advantage or some disadvantage.
Yes.
And the shorter version has the obvious advantage.
Yes.
Disadvantage is that we have to impose some 4π for the quantization, right? So
So
maybe you can explain a little bit more what kind of physical problem that will give us if we impose the 4π for quantization?
Okay. Okay, I can explain a little bit. Max may have something more to add on this.
What's the question?
Okay. So the question is, basically, why exactly is this thing illegal? So if I have something like this. So if I have a single Dirac fermion coupled to little a without any transimons term, and then the little a dynamical gauge field couples to the external capital a like this.
So there are actually two different illegal things happening there, right?
There are two different illegal things happening there. So one way to cure the two, one way that seems to be to cure the two with one shot, is you actually redefine A prime to be equal to 2A. Sorry, no. I'm doing the opposite thing. You redefine A as 2A prime, let's say. So then what you're doing, what you're having is a 2A here, and then that 1 over 2 pi to A prime dA. Okay. So that seems to be okay, at least on first sight, because now you're having something like 1 over 2 pi AD capital A, which is legal. And on this side, it looks like you are free from the parity anomaly issue.
Do you want to explain first the parity anomaly?
Oh, okay.
Maybe you could use the term to coupling to the external A and
what's
the problem with that?
Okay. So, So usually if I write a, even just a free Dirac fermion in two dimensions, so there is the well-known issue of parity anomaly. It's saying that time reversal and the U1 gauge invariants cannot be compatible with each other. I have to sacrifice at least one of them. So the usual way to say is if I have U1 charge conservation here, I should have a background Hall conductance 1 over 8 pi ADA here. So from a band theory point of view, this is something we're actually very familiar with, because we don't know how to write down a single Dirac fermion on a lattice without breaking the time reversal. Essentially, if you do that, what you're effectively doing is to have two Dirac fermions first, and then gap out one of them. And you work below the mass gap of this one, so effectively you have this. And so topological insulator essentially evades this constraint. Essentially, that's not totally correct, but essentially by having this extra transignment time as a bulk theta term, so you don't have to add that on the surface anymore. So this thing you're left with is time reversal invariant. Okay? But that, so Ti, but that requires A to be a 3 plus 1D gauge field, not just a 2 plus 1D. If you want your A to be just a 2 plus 1D gauge field, you need this this funny term here. Okay, if it's 2 plus 1D. So since capital A is a probe field anyway, you know, we can choose. Right? But if I'm promoting this capital A to a dynamical gauge field little a, then this is not an option unless I say that my little a also lives in a 3 plus 1 dimensional bulk. So if I want to have my little a just living on the surface of a 2 plus 1 dimensional surface, then this is a must. Okay? Otherwise, I'm having an anomaly. So, I mean, there are two kinds of anomaly. There's anomaly of a global symmetry, like what you have on a TI. And that's fine. We know how to deal with that. But there's another kind of anomaly called gauge anomaly. So it's an anomaly associated with your gauge symmetry. And that's something you never want. Whenever you have that, essentially you're saying your theory doesn't even make sense. It's not even well defined. So if you want to upgrade this to a dynamical gauge field in strict 2 plus 1 dimension, you need this. You cannot just take it out.
I mean, another way to say the same thing is, say I didn't have that term, I just had the Planck theory.
Yeah.
And I had a mass term to that.
Yeah.
I got a Hall conductance of 1/2.
Yeah.
So now if I put the theory on a sphere, let's say, and introduce the monopole,
yeah,
that would require the surface of the sphere to have half a gauge charge.
Yes. So you're So the reason precisely why it's illegal is because the old way to say it is to do a large gauge transform, and then you see that it's not even gauge invariant, or equivalently you can think of putting a monopole through the bulk through the surface, and then you realize the monopole operator is not gauge invariant. All right, so that's the explanation of the parity anomaly thing. So supposedly, if you do this redefinition, it looks like you're curing this problem, because if you have a coefficient 2 here, it looks like you don't really need to worry about the extra transignments term. Because naively, you want something that looks like 2a prime d 2a prime. But this is formally a Chen-Simon term of level 2. So you may think that you can actually cancel this level 2 by, one extra comment is because this Chen-Simon term is of level half, you can never cancel it. You can only add Chen-Simon term with integer levels to your theory. Right? So whatever you do, it will be some half integer level. But here it looks like it's an integer level, so maybe you can cancel it. So that's the naive argument. But it turns out it doesn't really work. The reason it doesn't work is because when you do this, it's also very important to impose that you do not have a field that couples to A prime as charge 1 particle. And that essentially kills all these arguments. You realize this is something that you cannot add either, and you run into those problems.
So if you don't allow charge 1 fields, you cannot add another ADA term?
I mean, essentially, if you have a gauge theory that only has even charge and no odd charge, it's a funny gauge theory. It's not something that you can get. For example, let's do the usual boson vortex duality.
Yes, there's UV, there must.
Yeah, but having it, you may say that can I have a charge 1 field that has very high energy, so I'm working below that energy, but that argument doesn't buy you any, because these are all topological arguments. It's just a matter of whether they exist or not.
Maybe another way to say that argument is when you have the unit charge, there's a natural unit monopole that comes from some compact case theory. Now, if you declare that do this A to 2A prime transformation, that would correspondingly change the monopole quantization.
Yeah.
You get half the old monopole, but you don't want to do that. You want to keep the old monopole quantization. If you change that as well, you've not done anything.
The attempt of doing this is basically to change the monopole quantization. Because
so you want to say a natural monopole that's allowed for the Dirac condition does not exist.
Essentially another way to say it is you want to say that the natural monopole you have in this theory is a 4-pi monopole, not a 2-pi monopole. So if I just say you're not allowed to ask about 2-pi monopole, then this theory seems okay. You don't have all this anomaly issue for that. Sort of.
Still defining the. So, in order to define the theory on the issue then becomes what happens on a compact manifold.
Yeah.
And on a compact manifold, you must say what are the gauge configurations that you are integrating over, and which gauge configurations are identified. Like usually, two gauge fields which are different by that. Gauge transformation, we identify, we kind of model by those gauge transformations. And there are large gauge transformations. And you have to, usually like if the flux around some loop changes by 2 pi, that's the same as not putting that flux there. And there is an issue when you just, if you don't specify what are the set of large gauge transformations which you allow, then, there's no difference between the first line and the second line.
Yep.
You can always redefine A to B to A. It's really the set of large gauge transformations which you allow which differentiates between the first line and the second line. And that set of large gauge transformations is determined by the matter field. Yep. So, So the two are kind of.
Yeah. So,
So there are no such issues in a long version?
No, there's no such an issue. In the long version, you have the proper 1 over 8 pi ADA here. And everything is, all the mutual couplings are 1 over 2 pi. This 1 over 4 pi thing, they're just self-coupling, which are totally fine.
So is it just that we are cheating when we write down the short version?
It's cheating a little bit. But for most purposes, that's fine.
It's like a footnote with the short version, but don't look at 2 pi monopoles.
Yeah, basically. And exactly why, you have to explain more elaborately.
But in all constructs, there's a reason why two-pi monopoles are confounded.
That's a good reason for that. there's a more formal way of taking that account without just words, right, with some formalism.
I can talk a little bit, but maybe there are, it's very formal, so maybe there are other questions.
But are you going to do something with either a long version or a short version? Because if you're not going to do anything with it, why care whether it's long or short? Keep it legal and long. Are you going to calculate anything? What are you going to do with it?
No, we have not been considering that how many words are legal yet. That how many words are supposed to really be large.
It's
the long version.
It's legal, but it's not just
problems.
Pisa.
Yeah, the long
version
has totally. I asked about the applications of the dollars. I think.
Well, I mean, just right at this moment, the discussion seems to be about when you write down a short version, there are a lot of illegal things happening, and there was some discussion about that. So I'm asking, okay, if the long version's fine and short version has issues. But if you're not going to calculate anything with either of them, you know, might as well write the long version without the issues. This is a question. You know, what is the purpose of writing all of this?
We had a discussion in Max's talk about the application.
So there is a issue. There is a whole thing about the SPT phases.
Surface state of the and also the Hopper number that derives from this duality. I mean, also, if there are some, you know, there's this conjecture that this is like a strong form of duality where they're dynamically the same. And that would say that this QED3 with just one flavor of two-component fermions is actually a stable fixed point, which is, I don't think people would have even conjectured that because there was a problem over there, so even a legal theory to begin with.
Yeah.
Right, now we know how to legalize it with certain on the surface of 3D or these other conditions, and then you can ask, maybe that's a stable theory, and in fact, maybe it's even secretly a free theory.
Yeah.
Right, so I mean, yeah, also, whether it's a 4-pi or 2-pi plus propagation shouldn't change the scale of behavior.
No.
It's just come over field theory, that doesn't matter.
If you're only looking at local operators, their collision functions, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Right. So it's only when you put it on the torus, you start to think really hard.
Yeah, if you want to compare with the experiments, it's just...
Sure. I mean...
Science compared to experiments?
Well, I mean, whether you have 2-pi, 4-pi, plus quantization doesn't change the scaling at all.
If the theory is not illegal, then why would you believe the duality?
Yeah, I'm saying that the duality actually implies a stronger statement. Which is n equals 1 QED with 2-pi quantization, which is a standard quantization. It gives a prediction of some scaling behavior of some local operator, which you can check numerically or experimentally. It's a prediction.
That one, to be fair, actually you have to be a little bit careful. Because when you say, if you want some numerical guide to check this thing, then you have to tell them how you even define QED3 at n equals 1.
Let me do the n equals 2 version, right?
That's okay, n equals 2 version.
That totally can be checked. And the duality of that thing is derived from duality of this equation, right? So that can be checked.
But having that, it doesn't directly imply that this also is true.
That's an evidence. Right?
Yeah, that's an evidence.
Can I ask a different question?
Yeah,
about
that. Okay.
Do you think, do we have any new information about, we have a statement of the duality, but do we actually know if there are actually higher order, say, quartic interactions, say, on the left-hand side? So let's use the legal duality.
Okay. What do you mean by?
So we have some statement that a free fermion, some interacting theory is actually a free theory.
Yeah.
So, but do we know if there are high order, if there are actually quartic interactions?
Well, you
in the full statement.
No, you flow to the IR. So.
Yeah, but you know, quartic operator dimensions.
Yeah. So.
So I mean, it's conceivable that there are actually additional interactions on the left hand side.
It's conceivable that in the, if you flow to the IR, there are some non-trivial operators with. some non-vanishing coefficients.
The question is about the UV, whether you start decoupling QED3.
Yeah, I'm actually, what's not clear to me yet is what the full statement of the duality is. Like, there could in principle be.
Okay. Let me clarify the full statement of the duality. There are two versions. I mean, actually.
So the fixed point that's achieved in infrared isn't just say that the interaction mediated by the gauge field, but actually some.
Can you make that distinction? Is that distinction meaningful? Just have some strongly interacting theory.
But... Yeah.
Any question?
I'm not claiming this is the fixed point. Lagrangian. So, but you have to flow from this, and the statement is at best they can be the two sides can be identical in the.
No, I mean I understand natural method rule set, but I'm just curious if you have any thoughts on whether maybe the infrared effective action actually includes such terms.
Okay.
Because I mean, yeah. That's all.
I mean, if they all the way flow down to zero, flow to some finite value, is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
I'm not sure that's a very sharp statement.
No.
I mean, I think the statement of strong duality is that, you know, that theory on the right plus a Maxwell term for little a flows in the infrared to a free theory without adding any quartic term for psi. But the quartic terms for psi are irrelevant.
No, I'm talking about the theory on the left. The quartic term and the theory on the left.
But those are also irrelevant.
Yeah, those are like tree level.
They're irrelevant in the UV.
How do you know that it's irrelevant? When it's a strongly interacting theory.
No, let's not say it's a free theory. Let's not say it's a free theory.
What's the question?
One of them is a free theory, so you could perturb the free theory by quartic interactions, but that's irrelevant as long as the coupling constant is smaller than some UV cutoff. And you could ask about perturbing the theory on the right by quartic interactions, but the QED3 by quartic interactions. But I think the conjecture is that without quartic interactions. Perhaps without quartic interactions, QED3
right.
is already dual.
Yeah, so I was just curious if there were any thoughts on what you thought. But that's all I'm asking.
What was n equals to 2? Chunky was saying something about n equals to 2.
I'm saying that,
which n is this?
So we were talking about whether we can really check whether it's a strong version of the argument valid or not. One way to check and put this n strong QED in your computer. And similarly, I check all the scaling of all polynomial operator whether it's consistent with a free formula or not, right? But there's a difficulty to simulate n equals 1 QED to the anomaly. But for n equals 2 QED, it's okay. So if this theory derived is correct, then actually n equals 2 QED must be self-dual, and n equals 2 QED can be simulated on computer. So we can use the n equals 2 QED simulate that one to make to give the evidence for this duality.
That n is that?
The flavor of the
duality. Flavor, yeah. Okay. And f equal to 2.
Yeah.
I see, double the frame.
Yeah. But that's not, but don't double the gauge field.
I understand.
Yeah. That's, I mean, if this correct, n equals 2 QED must be self-dual, and it gives you some prediction there, which can be checked in numerics.
Do you want to say a few words about this recent Monte Carlo paper about n equal to 2? That appeared on your Facebook page. Monte Carlo paper that was advertised in some Facebook discussions?
It's not on my Facebook page. I know nothing about the Facebook page. But all I can say is that they just, in the lab is a QED community, they simulate n equals 2 not compact QED, and they didn't find the spontaneous mass generation, and it's from scaling invariant.
There's no side problem?
I know it's true.
But there's no
side problem. For n equals 1, somebody there's a big issue to simulate, but n equals 2 is okay. And actually, there's a further prediction one can make, which has not been checked yet, but in principle can be checked numerically.
Thank you.
I have just one question about the, we've been discussing what's legal and what's not legal, and the hemiversal symmetry some of us think is not still legal.
Well, it's fine as long as you, you know, impose downshift
conditions. It's bizarre.
It's just bizarre.
It's bizarre, but it's not like outright illegal. Unless you're on a non-orientable manifold.
But my question is, but the case where I actually think of this gauge field as living in 3 plus 1 dimensions, and this is the surface of the couplet, is that case legal?
Oh yeah, then you can.
In one case where this is definitely no controversy.
No, so
duality can hold them.
Oh no, but. It's very important that whenever I have a dynamical gauge field, it's purely 2 plus 1 dimensional gauge field. So if I have a probe gauge field, I can play with it. Like I say, it's 3D, 2D, doesn't matter. But when I say I gauge the theory, it's very important to specify whether this lives in 3 plus 1D or 2 plus 1D. And in all these cases, I'm saying these are living in 2 plus 1D.
And none of those have... no issues at all. They're all, none of those are actually legal.
These are all legal. These are all.
One last question, right? So actually, there's an Eta function which actually locally plays the same role as half level.
Yeah.
But it's gauging merit.
Yeah.
Can I replace that half level?
Yeah. You're In fact, you're supposed to, but...
So is there a mutual Eta function which actually is equivalent to that 1 over 4 pi little a, right? Is there such thing?
I'm not entirely sure, but of course you can imagine having something like this. For example, if you have something like... this, that may be what you want.
Okay.
So what goes wrong with this time reversal operation on a non-orientable manifold?
You don't even know how to define it, because you have a field that has t square root of minus 1 on the field, like something that's supposed to be a physical local operator, like bosonic one.
Which one goes to minus itself?
This B and C gauge fields. Mm-hmm. So, which means their curl also goes to minus. You don't know. We don't know how to define it.
So just be clear. So if I replace the 1 over 4 pi A by dA by those three Eta functions.
You have to be a little bit. Okay.
Solve everything or solve everything?
No, it doesn't. Mm-hmm.
The problem is not changing. The problem is not with the. You can forget about the external gauge field.
Exactly.
Problem without the external gauge field.
Yeah.
And essentially, the Eta function is just a legal way of writing
this.
Of writing that. Yeah. The Eta function is just a legal term of writing the 1 over 8
1. Yeah. Right. Yeah. But it's a different issue here. It's a different.
So either is a gauging merit, right?
If you do the Eta instead of that formulation, what you will have is.
Maybe since most of us don't know what the Eta integral is, I think either we should explain what it is, or we should take this discussion offline. Unless I'm the only one who doesn't know what the.
I don't know what Eta is. That makes 12.
So, shall I explain the?
Yeah, if you can.
Okay. All right. So, So one thing that I've been hiding a little bit is that this technically is illegal as well.
To the purest, right?
To the purest. To the very purest. So, essentially, if you want to define this as a continuum field theory. In a sense, you're writing down two illegal terms and with the hope that the sum of them are legal. But it's better to just write this and no transamer or anything. And when you define the partition function, let's say you do it in Euclidean space-time. So you get the fermion determinant here. So you may want to say that this you can take the absolute value of the determinant and be the partition function, but turns out that's not really legal. If you regularize this correctly, well, meaning essentially you're doing again this, but in a sense without integrating this over, without integrating the other Dirac cone out, what you will get in the partition function is something like this. I think the coefficient may be pi over 2. Is that correct? I think so. Yeah. So so this term, morally, it looks like transaminant term at level half. So meaning, if you take the variation of this term with respect to capital A, it's the same as if you're taking variation with respect to a transaminant term at level half. So dynamic, so equation of motion-wise, they're the same. But this term has two, they're different in two ways. So first of all, this is fully gauge invariant, while this is not. So if you do a large gauge transformation on transaminant term level half, you get some funny phases in your partition function. So that's exactly why for a transaminant term, it's supposed to be properly quantized. So this is not gauge invariant, while this one is. However, you cannot write this as an integral of a local terms. Like for transaminant term, you can. It's integral of this guy. But for this funny guy, you cannot. And since this is fully gauge invariant, this is supposedly how you define what you mean by this free Dirac fermion in continuum. Yeah, but for practical purposes, that's good enough. So that's the.
Maybe that comment also applies to the duality as a whole.
Yeah. So
if things are illegal, it's
yeah.
There's a way to make it all. You know.
Yeah, if you want to make it everything fully legal, you take away this part and say you define this through this eta function thing.
Okay, I was going to go in the other direction. But in a simple form of the duality, like I get the sense that it sounds like it's completely wrong. You know, when you say it's illegal. But what it means is that there are certain caveats that go with that, and which you normally would not, you know, run into a contradiction with. You know, but when you look at the global properties, you will run into contradictions. Unless, for example, you say the monopole, single monopole is not allowed. Running a single monopole is not allowed. But if you did some perturbative calculation or something like that, where you just look at this dynamics of the Dirac fermions, that would not appear.
Yeah. For local questions, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, so certainly one final comment about that impulse too. So that theory is totally legal. There's no any false quantization issue at all, and it can be compared with numerics. That's so I think that's a theory that we should check better and try to study better and do more study about it.
So what's that duality actually?
N equals Q itself, Q to itself.
Due to itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, but.
Can you check the
it computed
itself twice.
how could us the NCC2R itself do?
I don't know.
There'll be some papers.
Well if that's true, that means that certain correlation functions of there's some operators that should have the same scaling dimension. That's not obvious. For example, for the NCCP1, if it's self-dual, that means the scaling dimension of the monopole operator and the Z1 dagger Z2 operator, the same things like that.
Yeah, first of all, self-dual means that it has like a O4 symmetry instead of SC2. For N equals 2, all have SC2. But self-dual is O4. O4 means that the correlation of some operator you would not expect to be the same as the operator. So that's something you can check. And not the total view, there's no way.
It's also interesting to think about whether you can try to numerically simulate the N equal 1.
Yeah, so you need to first get this.
Yeah.
So one thing you could imagine is taking a 3D system. Okay, this is one question of whether it's practical or not. That's a different question. But let's say you could simulate a three-dimensional system. you would couple it to a three-dimensional gauge field, you'll have a top, like a top loss translator, and then you try to confine the gauge field in the bar, right?
In numerics?
Yeah. Okay. In, you know, it's a plot numerical. If you're not able to do the plot numerical experiment, then you're in serious trouble, right? That's not well defined. But it is defined at that level, I think. It's just not practical, maybe, of today's computer.
Yeah.
But if it's not compact, then there are many ways to do it, even to couple it to a non-compact gauge theory, which may be sufficient to ask whether it's dynamically stable.
Can you do that in numerics, though? A non-compact gauge field?
It's not obvious why it should be, like, it's a bit. For the scheme, I think it's an interesting question.
Uh-huh. It doesn't get a single directional first.
Yeah.
How do you assume that?
No, but then there's another transition.
Yeah. Because right. You realize in 2D you always have something like this.
Maybe for the analytical one, though, it is the simpler one to check with. This one, or rather the inverse of this one, that's Landau-Ginzburg.
Yeah, this one may.
Maybe the inverse of it, that XY is blue to UD3 with
transcendence. Yeah. So, Max is talking about the inverse of this duality. Right. Essentially, you gauge this little a, and on this side, essentially, it becomes just the Wilson-Fisher.
So that is just the, you have a dynamical gauge field, but then you gap out one of the direct fermions.
Right.
Yeah. Max, do you want to share something? We have a few minutes maybe.
I don't know how far I can get, so maybe leave it for once Ryan is here.
Maybe one thing I can say that was, for the case for me, illuminating. So it's kind of surprising you hear anything to say about Dirac fermions and 100 years after Dirac, right? Almost 100 years. So what's special about these theories that they were not looked at before? I think it's precisely the fact that it kind of looks like you cannot do it in purely two dimensions. It looks like it has these, it's not a natural theory for people to look at. You're just interested in two-dimensional physics. And the other surprising thing is, why would you ever think that a single flavor of Dirac fermion is dynamically stable when you couple it to a gauge field? We've been told that even if you have several flavors, they often see current symmetry breaking, and so on. And the important distinction is that it's an odd number, a single one. And the kind of mass terms that you're allowed that are usually invoked for current symmetry breaking in the more regular cases where you have an even number of flavors, they're kind of like Pond-Spinhorn mass terms. They are positive for one flavor of Dirac fermion and negative for the other. That's an entirely different type of mass term than the one you are forced to add over here. Say the single Dirac fermion is massive, then you have to add the quantum Hall type of mass term. And even in large N, you can study the distinction between these type of mass terms, those that give you quantum Hall effect and those that give you spin Hall effect. And they have very different trends. One is seems to become more relevant as you lower the number of flavors, whereas the other goes the other way. So there is a story you can think of where, for this particular mass term, current symmetry breaking is not preferred, but if you have an even number, it would be. This can sort of evade that.
But that perspective would then warn us against reading too much from n equals 2, say, numerical simulation.
Well,
two versus one seem to be quite different from that.
But that's a different line of logic, I think.
Yeah, I'm saying that there are two different numerical evidence now showing that n equals 2 KUD actually could be a couple of two things. So the previous argument was that the one-way expansion would fail at some critical n, but didn't really make any
basically can't say anything reliable, but it's small. The reason Mario shows that the n equals 2 actually could still be a couple of field theory. You know, the previous Wall Band would say that this theory could have instability, but now actually you would say that it actually does not.
I see. So if even n equals 2 doesn't have instability, maybe that's true. They can be optimistic, n equals 1 doesn't have instability.
It's slightly different questions. N equal to 2 is actually, in some ways, more stable. It has more flavors, but it allows for this different kind of mass term that's
right.
More likely to
yeah.
be out there. Right. So then no more questions. Maybe we'll stop talking about dualities for a while.